States in the middle of the country have had a tumultuous economic spring and early summer. Uncertainty over tariffs and massive flooding have created financial concerns, though other factors like low unemployment continue to offer positive influences. Roby Rock, with our partner Talk Business and Politics, discusses the economy in his latest conversation with Mervin Jevaraj, director of the Center for Business and Economic Research at the Sam M. Walton College of Business at the University of Arkansas. Roby asked Mervin about proposals from some of the candidates seeking the Democratic Party presidential nomination to eliminate student debt. Jevaraj says student debt now totals about $1.5 trillion in the United States.
Second largest household debt category after mortgages. It's displaced auto loans. It's displaced credit card debt. So when we're thinking about household debt, that's a large quantity. And a lot of it is concentrated among millennials, the younger generation. And so when you look at the average millennial in Arkansas that's graduated college, about 55% of them have college debt, and about the average debt is about $27,000, which could get you a really nice tricked out Prius. So they're carrying a Prius worth of car payments in college debt, and that affects how much they're able to spend on other things. Say if they want to get married, if they want to buy a house, buy a car, or just spend money in the economy. And I think, you know, that's where a lot of this concern comes from, what that will do to the spending power of millennials going forward if they're carrying this debt over a long period of time, which I think they will be carrying over a long period of time. And so when you step back further from it and ask, well, why are they carrying all this debt? It's because they followed the advice of their parents and their counselors who said, to make a better living, to have a great in life, you should go to college. So about 40% of millennials have a college degree or higher, which is the largest proportion of any generation that we've tracked. The previous highest was probably about 29% with the Gen X generation. So this generation is far more educated, so they're carrying a lot more debt. And, you know, people often wonder whether this was a good bargain to do, to go to college, to have that many people go to college. And the truth of the fact is that college education is still a great bargain, even with the debt. The average worker with a bachelor's degree or higher makes $30,000 more than somebody with just a high school degree, and that's $30,000 each year. Over the course of their 40-year career, that's a lot of money. So even if you consider that these households may carry about $100,000 or less in debt, you might look at that and say it's still worth it compared to the 40 years of $30,000 or more that you will make over the time, over your career's span. So college is still a great bargain. College, unfortunately, is a lot more expensive as a result of state funding cuts and increased tuition to make up for it. But in general, you know, it is still a good bargain. Now, the question about wiping out college debt or canceling portions of college debt raises questions about inequality. So as I mentioned, if a college graduate is making $30,000 more than somebody that does not have a college degree, they're already going to have a head start in life with their debt included. And so it's a matter of, well, if you cancel all their debt, how much more of a head start are they going to get compared to somebody that does not have a college degree? And that does raise issues about inequality within the generation of millennials as well.
Demographic changes across the country show some growth in minority groups as the nation moves closer to majority-minority status. Here in the 8th District, which includes Arkansas, we are behind that trend. Do you think that this explains some of the political economic angst that we see? And how should business leaders interpret these facts?
I think there are a couple of different reasons why the 8th District is not like the rest of the nation, and Arkansas as well included in there. And some of those factors are obviously after the Jim Crow era and stuff, you saw a lot of minority populations move out of the South to jobs in the North. And that really stayed that way, and those people never really came back to Arkansas. And a lot of other areas attracted a lot of migrants to their regions because they had thriving economies. And so, again, within the 8th District, economies weren't necessarily thriving, so it didn't attract huge migrant population groups. So a lot of the migrant population groups, as you can imagine, are along the coastal cities where the economies are a lot growing a lot more faster than they are here in Arkansas. So compared to all of these different regions, obviously this changes the demographic makeup of what Arkansas is like. And Obviously, the region also has less educational attainment compared to the rest of the nation, and it'll have fewer younger people living here because the economic opportunities are so much greater on the other side. So really, if you think back to all the different issues, one thing that this region and the 8th District could do to attract more migrants, to attract more people to live in this area, which brings its own form of economic vitality, is to improve educational attainment, which then improves the economy. As we get a more vibrant economy here in the 8th District and in Arkansas, you'll see more people move here, not only from other parts of the country, but from other countries as well, bringing with them all of that economic vitality, which we're really missing here in the 8th District and in Arkansas.
Well, we've talked college debt and changing demographics. Another study out this week shows that medical debt is pounding Arkansans. Where does medical debt stand on your list of concerns for the economy?
So medical debt is something that we don't really talk about a whole lot. But if you look at the sheer number of GoFundMe pages or any such things about people needing help from their fellow citizens to pay off their medical bills, you'll see that it is an ongoing concern for a large number of Americans and Arkansans. I think the key to note here is that the medical debt, or the proportion of people having past due medical debt in Arkansas, has gone down since 2012. That has to, in large part, be because of the Medicaid expansion that passed in 2014. And a lot more people have insurance in Arkansas. In fact, we had some of the biggest drops in uninsurance rates here in the state of Arkansas as a result of the Medicaid expansion. So all of that has reduced the number of people that have outstanding medical debt, but they still do have medical debt, which, much like student loans and all of these other loans, does follow them along unless they declare bankruptcy, and does affect their spending power, their ability to participate wholly in the economy.
That same study shows the gap between haves and have-nots is widening. Combined with those two big debt issues, it would suggest that U.S. economy is maybe not as sound as indicators like unemployment and GDP growth and consumer spending would lead us to believe. My question to you is, do you think we're on the bubble of something?
I think what we are beginning to talk about but really haven't addressed yet is something that has been with us for a very long time in the U.S. economy, and that's the growing inequality. And I think, you know, the levels of inequality that we are at now, the Federal Reserve just released a data set that shows the wealth distribution for various income levels. And the most recent data shows that as of the end of 2018, the top 1% had about 30% of the wealth in the United States. The percentage, the folks between 90 and 99% of the income distribution had about 40% of the wealth. The people between 50 and 90% had about another 30% of the wealth, and then the bottom 50% had just about 1% of the wealth. So when you're looking at that wide discrepancy, the top 10% having about 70% of the wealth, the bottom 50% have just 1%, that level of inequality, you know, you might look at the unemployment rates being low, GDP's positive. This is the longest economic expansion in U.S. history, if it's still the slowest one. There have been modest levels of wage growth, but that, you know, sheer discrepancy in that wealth gap that you see there between the bottom 50% and the top 10%, or the top 50% even, is, in a sense, dangerous for democracy itself to maintain that level of inequality in our economy.
Mervin Jebaraj is the director of the Center for Business and Economic Research at the Sam M. Walton College of Business at the University of Arkansas. He talked with Roby Brock with our partner, Talk Business and Politics.